The election through the eyes of an economist. I'm David Brancaccio. To what extent is it Homo economicus going to the polls tomorrow? Humans who make consistently rational choices about what is in their interests? The economic environment in which people will be voting is a contradiction these days. It's one of the strongest of job markets, with wages increasing over 7% in a year. Yet inflation is increasing prices by more than 8% in a year. And the stock market's been lousy, with the S&P down 21% this year. How does a macroeconomist think about Election Day? Julia Coronado is founder of Macro Policy Perspectives and a professor at the University of Texas, Austin. Good morning, Julia.
Good morning.
All right. I don't follow political predictions, but how are you thinking about how this election could impact the economy?
You know, David, for the immediate outlook, it is not necessarily a game changer. There has been a flurry of legislation, the infrastructure bill, the CHIPS Act, the Inflation Reduction Act. These are pretty major pieces of legislation that have programs that are going to be in place for several years. This is not just a one-year horizon spending bill. These are sort of structural things. So that element of fiscal policy is pretty important and not likely to be changed by the election results.
So some big spending programs on a kind of cruise control, at least for the next 2 years. But we do have the possibility that both houses of Congress end up controlled by Republicans. And that has some economists thinking about the so-called debt ceiling.
That's right. The debt ceiling is the limitation on borrowing, and the Congress must lift it every so often to allow the government to function. And yes, the fear is that Republicans would be wanting to sort of play brinksmanship with the debt ceiling, which we have done in the past. We did it in 2011, nearly defaulting on the debt. At a time when markets are already really volatile, that could just add more volatility to, you know, a very rocky global financial landscape.
Also, did you see those unsourced stories about a month ago that maybe Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen might go after the election?
Right. So appointments are another thing that Republican control of the Senate could disrupt. There's usually some turnover midway through an administration. Yellen herself sort of downplayed those rumors, said that she likes her job and plans on staying.
Always good to start the week with economist Julia Coronado at Macro Policy Perspectives and a professor at UT Austin. Thank you.
My pleasure.
We'll get new data on consumer credit later today from the Federal Reserve, yielding a sense of how much people are borrowing and for what. Other recent data from both the New York Fed and the credit bureau Equifax show that credit card debt is rising. As of September, Equifax found it's back to pre-pandemic levels. Marketplace's Samantha Fields has that.
Some of the rise in credit card debt is because of inflation. Everything just costs more these days. Ted Rossman at Bankrate says interest rates on credit cards are also up, and there's still an element of pent-up demand.
As the pandemic has gotten better, more people are spending on travel and dining and other out-of-home activities.
Most of the rise in credit card balances is among people with good credit who seem able to keep up with their payments, says Tom Aliff at Equifax. But
are there consumers that are struggling? There absolutely are.
The percentage of people who are late on their payments is rising, he says, especially among consumers with low incomes and low credit scores. But
while delinquencies have risen, they're not as high as they were pre-pandemic.
That's likely in part because many people still have more savings than they did before the pandemic, says Josh Bivens at the Economic Policy Institute.
And plus, we still have a very strong job market. I think inflation has convinced people this is a terrible economy for people.
But he says it's not. Unemployment is low, and there are still a lot of jobs to be found. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
Twitter has laid off roughly half of its staff, but what about the workers who are left to run the company now? As Marketplace's Christian Schwab reports, the way companies let people go can also influence how the people who stay feel.
Usually, a lot of preparation goes into how layoffs are communicated. Will the company send everyone an email? Will it hold mass meetings or one-on-ones? Will managers break the news over Zoom or in person? These details matter, not just to the people who are being let go, but to the employees who are sticking around. Michael Sturman is a professor of human resources management at Rutgers University.
If the coworkers are laid off in a very aggressive way or a negative way that doesn't seem respectful, it's going to make their situation of still being surviving in the company that much harder to personally deal with.
In one study, workers who survived layoffs at more than 300 companies say their productivity declined afterwards. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
And although thousands were laid off at Twitter under Elon Musk, there's a report that dozens are sheepishly being asked to come back. This according to Bloomberg News. Twitter's founder Jack Dorsey took to Twitter over the weekend to apologize to those losing jobs, blaming himself for growing the company, in his view, too quickly. He said he loved everyone who ever worked there, but, quote, "I don't expect that to be mutual in this moment or ever, and I understand." Dorsey did not reference any emotions those laid off might feel about the new owner over there. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.